Okay. Where did you get yours, Anandamayi?
In Poland.
Where did you get yours, Amrita? In Germany. What's the process for getting a license in Poland? You have to do a theoretical exam first. Is that common with everyone? You do a theoretical exam first? Yeah? Then you get your learner's plates and you can get in the car and try and learn to drive the thing. Is that the way it works? Yeah? Those of you who do have driver's licenses, do you remember the first time you got into a car to try and learn to drive the thing? Anybody remember? I mentioned it obviously. Does you want to tell us what the experience was? A little louder, I can't hear you. But dude, Priya looks like she had an interesting experience. Does you want to share? Windscreen. So we have experience that when we first get into this car to try and start driving it, things don't quite coordinate so well. It takes a bit of time to get things organized. Did any of you, that first day that you got into a car, did any of you think, am I supposed to be here driving this thing or not? Did any of you think that? No? No. We all had questions how to make the thing work. Now the interesting thing about Arjuna at the beginning of the third chapter is he's done all his theory. Krishna has given him so much philosophy, so much theory in chapter 2. Kama Yoga, third chapter, we're supposed to learn how to operate it. And his first questions are, am I supposed to be here or not? Am I supposed to work or announce? Now this is a very interesting thing. That he has this dilemma, even though he's taken the trouble to get his drivers, his learners, he's in the car, somebody wants to instruct him how to operate it, and he's back to square one on the mental platform saying, well, am I supposed to be in this car? Or am I not supposed to be in this car? You see, so he's completely on the mental platform. So we can understand that Arjuna is very confused. Even though Krishna has just spent so much time giving him so much information, he really can't understand practically what Krishna has taught him in chapter 2 about Buddha Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. Instead of getting into the situation and saying, well, how do I work it? You told me all this last time, but how does it work in this situation? He doesn't ask that question, which would be the logical one to ask. He says, am I supposed to be here or not? Am I supposed to renounce this whole situation? Am I supposed to be here? So it's this question, why is he so confused? Why is he so confused that I want to have a look at before we even start chapter 3? Because Arjuna is going to get bewildered about this 3 or 4 times in Bhagavad Gita. Even in chapter 18, the final, the concluding chapter, even at the beginning of this chapter, he's still asking the same question. Now this is really quite strange. You know? So I think, why? Why is he so bewildered about this Buddha Yoga? Now I have a little thing to share with you, which I think will help us understand Arjuna's situation, but also help us understand our own situation. Just have a look at this chart. See what you can make of it. We'll read through it, and then we'll see if you understand what I've written here. Arjuna has accepted the role of a conditioned soul. Okay? He's one of us. He's not in the position of a nitya siddha at this point in time. Now the conditioned soul, he lives and acts on the mental platform. That means mind is very dominant. Uncontrolled mind is very dominant. And the conditioned mind has two functions. Sankalpa, accepting, and vikalpa, rejecting. Now from this sankalpa is the idea of bhog. We are going to enjoy, therefore we accept. And with we reject things when we find that we're not getting the enjoyment we expected to get out of it, or we feel it would be better for some reason to reject this particular thing at this point in time. So we can see that this bhog develops from sankalpa, and tyag, or renunciation, develops from vikalpa, or rejecting. Now, if you want to make a philosophy and lifestyle of this, you can make
the next step down, which is from this Sankalpa Bhog, we have Kama. Okay? And from the Vikalpa Tyag, we have Gyan. So one, Kama means activity. Gyan means knowledge. So it's the eternal occupation of the conditioned mind to swing between these two extremes, dragging his owner with him. You ever had that experience? Sometimes you just want to renounce everything. Everything is just too much. I don't want to know about it. Right? And another time, what's this? That time I enjoyed a bit. Mm-hmm. And we swing the other way, isn't it? We swing from one side to the other constantly. Sometimes subtle ways, sometimes very gross and obvious ways. This will continue until we get to the anatta nivritti platform, until we finish clearing out all the anattas that are there giving us problems. Now the reason that Arjuna, he can't work out this buddhi yoga, is because Krishna is asking him and us to do both these things together. Now just think, for millions of lives, you've been swinging this way, activity, that way, renunciation, backwards and forwards, many, 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 many lifetimes, millions of lifetimes. And now somebody says to you, okay, do the two together. Huh? That's a paradigm shift. That's something revolutionary. I've never thought of doing that. But that's what Krishna is asking us to do. So if we understand this dilemma that Arjuna has, we can understand the workings behind it. Then we can understand what's happening with us also. We can understand the flow of Bhagavad Gita, why Krishna is preaching as he is to Arjuna, who at this time still has a mind that's tending towards rejecting his occupational duty. Does anybody have any questions about this? Does it make sense to you, what I'm saying here? Make sense? It usually is, Tyag is usually a swing on the pendulum. It may be that we're thinking elevation, but our concept of elevation is limited. It's not balanced. So I take your point, but what Krishna is asking for is the real Tyag. He wants action in Krishna consciousness, action done for the satisfaction of Krishna. As conditioned souls, all we've ever known is sense enjoyment and renunciation, the swing, one side to the other. So Krishna is asking us to bring the karma and jnana together, to work, but to work in knowledge. Any other questions? Clarification or whatever? It's okay? So if we understand at this point why Arjuna is so concerned or so confused, it'll help us in understanding the way Krishna preaches to him. Okay. So we can understand that what I've written here means the conditioned soul has to undergo a paradigm shift. That means there has to be a whole change of consciousness, whole change of how we do things, that we have to come to terms with. So why is Arjuna asking questions again at the beginning of chapter 3? Because we need to hear more. We need to hear more. And so Krishna will explain everything very firmly and clearly to his sincere and surrendered disciple, just to lead us on the straight and well-lit path back home. Prabhupada makes this point very clear in his purport to verse 2. I'm going to read this whole purport because it's very instructive. In the previous chapter, as a prelude to Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained, such as Sankhya Yoga, Buddha Yoga, control of the senses by intelligence, work without fruited desire, and the position of the neophyte. This was all presented unsystematically. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna therefore wanted to clear up these apparently confusing matters so that any common man could accept them without misinterpretation. Although Krishna has no intention of confusing Arjuna by any jugglery of words, Arjuna could not follow the process of Krishna consciousness, either by inertia or by active service. In other words, by his questions, he is clearing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students who seriously want to understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so I'd like to begin chapter 3 by giving us a little bit of an idea of what we're going to be dealing with in this chapter. I'm going to read one line from the pulpit to 3:1 and a paragraph from the pulpit to 3:43. Lord Krishna elaborately explains Kama Yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. And then from 3:43, this third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overloading and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed toward one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. This is from 3:43, purport. Just to give us some idea of what we're going to be dealing with in this chapter. It's very clear from what we've just heard from Prabhupada that Kama Yoga, a work in Krishna consciousness, is the main theme of this chapter. Krishna is going to teach us how to do it. Now, in these first two verses, Arjuna admits his confusion. Krishna, in chapter 2, you've recommended Buddha Yoga, using one's intelligence to connect with the Supreme, and you've condemned fruitive work. But still you're wanting me to fight. Given everything you've said in chapter 2, isn't it better than I don't fight? This dilemma is still there. And these questions are meant to give Krishna another opportunity to explain Krishna conscious action very systematically and clearly. And he does that in verses 3 to 9. Now, we spoke in chapter 2 about Krishna the counselor. We can also pick up some valuable lessons in the first two sections of chapter 3. We see from the first two verses that Arjuna is still very much on the mental plane. He's bewildered. So we notice in the first section, 1 to 9, Krishna, here, he speaks very clearly, very reasonably, very practically. No high philosophy in these verses. And then in the second section, he gives the overall rounded picture. These are very good tips for us as preachers, especially if we're dealing with devotees who are a little confused about what they're supposed to do at any particular time. When the preaching is more in the mood of counseling, we have to remember always to check, what is the mind doing? It's the mind that has to surrender to Krishna. It's the mind that accepts and rejects. So somehow or other, we have to get this mind on side with us. So let's have a look at the answers or the instructions that Krishna gives here in these verses. He's giving his answers in a nutshell, very, very brief. He's instructing Arjuna to perform his duty without attachment, and he's giving very valuable, obvious, reasonable arguments why this is a superior path. In verse 3, he says, please, be both active and philosophical. He just makes a statement here, basically. Prabhupada has some interesting things to say both in a lecture and in his purport to this verse. We'll read the purport first. He says here, that's about 10 lines down on the second page of the purport. Both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism. By philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So here Prabhupada is giving his first clue why it's a good idea for him to stop choosing one or the other, jnana or karma, and start working them together. because then you can start to do things in a balanced way. I'll read this again because it's important. Both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Religion without philosophy is sentiment, or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy or gyan without religion is mental speculation. Prabhupada really spells this out in his 68 Los Angeles lecture series. There are a certain class of men who are simply philosophizing, and there are a certain class of men who are simply blindly following religious ritualistic process. So Bhagavad Gita is a combination of both. That is scientific. You should be religious, but should understand everything philosophically. Otherwise, one becomes fanatic, religious fanatic. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is clearly said that Chaitanya Dayakata Karaha Vichar. You people, you try to understand the gifts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by your philosophical understanding, not blindly, philosophically. And vichara kolile chitte paibe chamatkara. If you are actually a wise man, then you'll find it sublime. And if you simply stick to your own religious, ritualistic principles, don't try to understand the philosophy of everything, then you become a fanatic. So we should not become religious fanatics, nor dry mental speculators. But both these classes of men are dangerous. They cannot make any advancement. The combination we want. You should be religious, but try to understand each and every line philosophically. Huh? So here we're getting a very clear picture, further elaboration of what Krishna has said from Prabhupada. He's given the inside picture here. That, yeah, we want balance. We want sane people. Huh? So let's put the two together. You act, and you think philosophically about why you're doing what you're doing. In verse 4, Krishna starts to give very logical reasons why we should work in Krishna consciousness. Two things he says, both of them quite deep. You can't stop karmic reactions simply by stopping work. Anybody want to tell me why? Why can't you stop karmic reaction just by stopping work? Yeah? Yeah. The functions of the body are going to go on. We're living personalities. So those functions will continue, and those functions will bring karmic reaction. Right. Also, you can't attain perfection only through renunciation. Can't attain perfection through renunciation. Why is that? Why not? A lot of people try. A lot of people in Orange and Vrindavan. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. That's a nice point. They're not pure. So there's still contamination in the heart. The way to get rid of that contamination of heart is to work by our activity to become purified. So we can't just renounce. The dirt is still in the heart. There's no way that we can get rid of it without activity. Jetadapanamajanam. So, here's two reasons that Krishna has given. Why renunciation is not good enough, especially in the early stages. Havari, you had a question? Yeah. This is a fact. This is Krishna's next argument in verse 5. Huh? You're in line with what he says. He says in the verse 5, it's intrinsic to your nature to be active, both as soul and as conditioned soul. In your purified state and in your conditioned state, you will be active. In your conditioned state, as Parvati's just said, the modes are pushing. You're going to act. They'll force you to act. You can't be inactive. I'd like to read Prabhupada's purport here because it will give us a fuller picture of what Krishna is saying. Just the first half a para. It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. Questions to later? Is that okay? Verses 6 to 7, Krishna is warning Arjuna the dangers of false renunciation, which Tosti just mentioned. He also points out the superiority of actively working in Krishna consciousness. He's already told Arjuna that his adhika, his eligibility, is karma. He should work for purification. In essence, Krishna is telling him, if you try and renounce before your heart is clean, there'll be problems. Don't be a pretender. And don't try and act on a false platform. You'll only create problems. Actually, this point is very important for all of us. We all have to learn to act according to our eligibility at any particular time. What is our adhika at any particular time? And work accordingly. If we don't do that, we'll be a disturbance to ourselves and a disturbance to the society of devotees. Now in verse 6 to 7, Krishna and Prabhupada also give very strong words of encouragement to their sincere grihastha devotees. He says, far better to be properly situated in grihastha ashram than to be a false renunciate. It's a very nice point. We've had some strange ideas of what grihastha life means at management level in ISKCON over the years. But actually here Krishna is asserting, no, this is a bona fide and useful ashram. If you do it right, it's very pleasing, both to the founder Acharya of ISKCON and to Krishna. In verse 8, Krishna reminds Arjuna that he can't even maintain his body without work. Especially in India, you see that, isn't it? How much time and energy the body takes to take care of. In the West, it's more facility for making everything automatic. But in India, you really come to understand how much time and energy you have to spend to just maintain the body. It's incredible. The different aspects in Prabhupada's purport, two in particular that I'd like to share with you on this verse. So Krishna is saying in the verse, 8th verse, yeah, perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Prabhupada makes two main points of interest in the purport. About four lines down, he says, Lord Krishna did not want Arjuna to become a pretender. Rather, the Lord desired that Arjuna perform his prescribed duty as set forth for Kshatriyas. Arjuna was a householder and a military general, and therefore it was better for him to remain as such and perform his religious duties as prescribed for the householder Kshatriya. Such activities gradually cleanse the heart of a mundane man and free him from material contamination. And then about five lines down, Prabhupada says, anyone who is in the material world is certainly possessed of the impure propensity for lording it over material nature, or in other words, for sense gratification. Such polluted propensities have to be cleared. Without doing so, through prescribed duties, one should never attempt to become a so-called transcendentalist, renouncing work and living at the cost of others. This is another lesson here for us, that have a look at who we are and what we are and act accordingly, rather than become a sycophant in the society. The points there are that better if you can be properly situated according to where you're at now and perform your duties in that way, that's very pleasing to Krishna and it's elevating. But the other side of the coin is if you artificially renounce long before the heart is purified, then it's going to be a disturbance, and you're probably not going to be a very useful person. You're going to be relying on others who are honestly earning their living. So it's sort of like a parasite type mentality, which further stops any chance for purification and elevation. You know, renunciate means should be preaching and writing preaching materials. Prabhupada explains this in Bhagavatam purports, and they have a purpose. Yeah. Can we please wait to keep the questions till last? There are many pseudo meditators who misrepresent themselves as belonging to high parentage and great professional men who falsely pose that they have sacrificed everything for the sake of advancement in spiritual life. This is very common in India, that you have people claiming they're from the Sarasvati Brahmin family, so therefore they're in a position where you should be entertaining them, maintaining them, taking instruction from them. And the greatly professional men, you find this in Vrindavan, Prabhupada himself has mentioned it, that you have people who come to live in Vrindavan, but they leave their wealth in the bank. You know, so they maintain their wealth, but they come and they act as so-called renunciates in Vrindavan. They're very simply here, but they've still got their piggy bank. They've still got their interest coming in, you know. So it's just a cheating mentality. Prabhupada is basically just pointing out the cheating mentality here. Verse 9 is Krishna's key instruction in this section, and he very clearly says it as it is. He says, if you don't work for me in a mood of sacrifice, your work will bind you. There will be karmic reaction. So better you perform your prescribed duties for my satisfaction, because that will also be your satisfaction and happiness. Okay. Sounds like a pretty reasonable argument. Krishna adds something in the Prabhupada adds something in the purport that adds a certain sweetness to this. It's a very, very nice point. He says, nothing should be done for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from reaction to work, but also gradually elevate one to the transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. So for this, this is very much Prabhupada's mood, that he's not only talking about protecting ourselves from fruitive reaction, but rather he's talking about the goal. Prabhupada is always very much centered on the goal. The goal is to redevelop your love for Krishna. So if your heart's full of dirt, how can you do that? So okay, do your work as Krishna is asking, so you become purified, so there's no further sinful reaction. But remember that the main thing is, we're doing that because we want to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna. You know? Our mood is not just to become purified. Why do we want to become purified? So that we can become attracted to Govindadev, isn't it? If a magnet, if a piece of iron is covered with dirt, you put it near a magnet, does anything happen? Anything happen? No. No attraction there. But when you clean off the dirt, you've got raw iron and you've got a magnet, what happens? Immediate attraction. So we're not trying to get rid of the dirt for the dirt's sake. We're trying to get rid of it because it's stopping our attraction for Vrindadev. This is a point that Prabhupada is making here as a Gaur Bhakta. Okay, any questions on what I've said this morning? Yeah, Rukmavati? What Prabhupada is basically, what you're experience saying about Prabhupada's movement in the early days is exactly what is being described here. We are talking about Madhyam culture. Prabhupada gave us Madhyam culture, and it's based on Bhagavad video, Bhagavad principles. If you remember those early days with Prabhupada, Parvati can probably tell you more about this, that very, very strong emphasis on kirtan. Very strong emphasis on kirtan. So that the whole mood was not concerned so much with the externals of the circumstance, but rather with the pleasure of Krishna, the pleasure of Guru, getting things done. So this is exactly what Krishna wants us to do. He wants us to come to the platform of Buddha Yoga, acting for Him in Krishna consciousness. Now in the 12th chapter, Krishna will give a ladder, very clear ladder, where you can work out exactly where you fit at this point in time. He'll give it from top to bottom. Note, I'm not saying good, bad. I'm saying top to bottom. There are different levels of activity that we can choose to be engaged in. What is best for us is good for us. So you'll see in Bhagavad Gita that he will go into this in quite some detail so that we can be properly situated for our particular level of purification at this point in time, our particular qualities and modes that are governing us at this point in time. All of these factors we can take into consideration. If we're very powerfully attached to the Bhagavad Vidhi, a lot of Shravanam, Kirtanam, we're in a temple where it's very, very dynamic, always classes, always Harinams, nobody eats anything but prasad, all of this is very, very strict and strong, then you'll find in that kind of temple there's not so much concern for dealing with all these externals. People are just blissfully engaged on the spiritual platform. That's how it was in Prabhupada's days. And it will come back to that. The Majjham culture is coming up again. It will take time, but it's happening. Is that okay?
I have a question.
You'll read about that and study that in Nectar of Devotion. This is why Bhakti Yoga is the only process that actually works. Because it clears not only the sinful reaction, it clears the seeds to reaction, it clears the ignorance, and it clears the tendency to sinful activity. So it cleans everything out. So that's why it's so important to be actively engaged in devotional service. No. That's why Krishna is saying here, by itself you can't get perfection. Because how are you going to be purified? If you want perfection, you've got to be purified. So where's that purification going to be coming from if you're not involved in any activity? Actually, when you look at it, practically speaking, when we look at the yoga ladder tomorrow, it looks like jnana is higher than karma. But actually, practically speaking, karma is higher than jnana because the activity will give purification. And you see in Ashtanga yoga, even there are two activities there. The first level of Ashtanga yoga is very much geared towards activity. That is meant to bring us to a level of purification where we can do just meditation. So jnana has a lot of limitations. And that's why Krishna is telling us here, stop this swinging between the two. You know, it's not. Where's it going to get you? It's not going to purify you and bring you back to me. We've got to put the two together. That's called Buddha yoga. It's a hard one to sort out practically speaking. Philosophically, we may be able to accept it, but trying to get it to work together practically in our lives, it takes a lot of practice and a lot of purification. Yashoda?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In all levels of vana and ashram, we are dealing with purification. And the prescribed duties of that vana and ashram are specifically for that purpose. Again, it's not a matter of one being better than the other. It's just a matter of, look, where do I fit into the situation? And I fit in there. And then by fitting in where I, you know, fit properly, I can be purified. Yeah, it's like that. We're a disturbance to ourselves and to the society of Vaishnavas. I hope he's got a Brahminical wife. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife chanted 64 rounds a day, so it can be done. You can live as two sadhus. But if there's a mix-max, you know, you're going to have a problem. That's why it's so important that, you know, like, on the one hand, it's the duty of the husband to provide. On the other hand, it's the duty of the wife to be satisfied with what the husband is able to provide. There's a Vedic stricture. Not to expect more than what the husband can give. Well, these are particular circumstances that would have to be dealt with. I wouldn't see it within my purview to judge it.
Mm.
Yeah. This is why I said that little bit about at the beginning about looking at this section again as Krishna the counselor. It's a certain kind of preaching that's going on here. Because the first two questions, the first two verses make it very clear that again Arjuna is on the mental platform. So that has to be dealt with delicately. So Krishna's first response is to make things very clear for him. Very reasonably, very practically. There's no high philosophy there. It's all just straightforward, practical reasons why he should be engaged in Buddha Yoga. So then when you're dealing with a mind, you have to sort of bring it round slowly. So what he's used as a next step is he's broadened the picture. Because we can understand from Arjuna's questions that the main problem for him is this enjoyment argument. This is really the main argument for him. He really wants to enjoy, isn't it? So he really wants to enjoy. So okay, you want to enjoy, but do it like this. First of all, he says in the first nine verses, do it like this, do it according to Buddha Yoga. There's no sinful reaction, you can enjoy all you like, no problem. Okay, do it, you know, do it in Krishna consciousness. But then the mind is going to have a look at that and maybe not like that. It may be a little bit too high. So then Krishna will bring it down into the big picture again, like he does in the second chapter. And he'll say, okay, well, you know, this is the way it works in material creation. This is the way it works. That you perform sacrifice, and then that means you please the demigods, and then, you know, when they're pleased, then you get what you need. And that way you can be peaceful and happy and, you know. It's very similar. It's very, very similar. Yeah. Because when you're dealing with someone who's on the mental platform, you have to be very sensitive. How much can they take at this particular point in time? So, you know, they may still want you to talk to them, but that doesn't mean you just throw, you know, philosophical bricks at them one after another. You know, it may get to a point where it hurts too much and they don't want to hear any more. They may not come back for months. Okay, so you've got to work out when you... It's basically some preaching tools we're learning here. How do we talk to people? If someone's on the mental platform, from what his way Krishna's dealing in the first nine chapters, we're not going to talk a lot of high philosophy. He's talking very practically, making very reasonable arguments for what he's saying. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. See, we as devotees tend to think that karma kanda is a bad thing. For us, it's a dirty word. But karma kanda is also given by Krishna. And in this section, tomorrow's section, all he's basically doing is explaining how it works. It's not the karma kanda is bad. It's the karma kandi's mentality is a problem. We always have to look. It's often not the thing that's the problem. It's the mentality towards it that's the problem. You get the point? It's a subtle thing. But it's just, you know, like the thing itself is not a problem. Krishna has given this system for people to make advancement from being gross materialists to coming to the point of karma yoga. But the problem is that, you know, there's this really gross doership and enjoyership and controllership mentality in the minds of most karma kandis. That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if we can see things in a balanced way, you know, everything is within Krishna consciousness, so, you know, how does Krishna see it? If we always try and see things from Krishna's point of view, then we tend to have a more balanced perspective. From our own point of view, we tend to suffer with aversion and attraction. We have things that we, for some reason, have an aversion to, for some reason, have an attraction to, and that sort of colours how we see things. So it's better to look at it from Krishna's point of view. Any other questions on these verses? Verse 6, huh? Okay, no problem. Read the whole sentence. It's always good to read the full thing in perspective. For sense enjoyment, one can act in any capacity of the social order, but if one follows the rules and regulations of his particular status, he can make gradual progress in purifying his existence. There is sense enjoyment of different caliber in all of the social orders, some of it subtle, some of it gross. But the point that Prabhupada is making here is that if we follow the rules and regulations according to our particular position, then we can be elevated. We can have the enjoyment, but at the same time we can become elevated. We'll be looking at this in more detail tomorrow in the Kamakanda to Kama Yoga section. Is it okay? Yeah? Rukmavati. That's why it's very nice to make Shikshastika a part of your daily life. Because this meditation gets out the anomalies, the material anomalies from our hearts, the misconceptions we have about relationship, about Krishna, like that. If you make Shikshastika a daily part of your life, daily meditation in your life, that helps deal with that a lot, very nicely. Yeah. It's very powerful, this priest. Anything else? Yeah, poverty. Whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord. Yeah. 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 No, this is an essential point. It's an essential point. I think in reading this book, what those who have been in the movement a long time would have some very sorry thoughts. Isn't it? Anyway, we learn by our mistakes. Okay, what I'd like to do is to finish chapter 2, fill in. So you don't have to bring your book again tomorrow. Did we finish the end of section 2, yeah? Was it B we finished? Did we finish B? Yes? Okay, so we're up to C, huh? Nothing in C to fill in, so we're looking at D. Only one there. Fear of sinful reactions. Section D? Nothing in C. D is only one. Sinful reactions. Sinful, yes. Okay, E. Once performed is never lost. We're in section E. Page 4, section E. Once performed is never lost. Protects one from the greatest danger. One has resolute determination. Obstacles to determination. Attachment to material opulence. Attachment to material sense gratification. Sankirtan Yajna fulfills the purpose of the Vedas. Purpose fulfills the purpose of the Vedas. Freedom from sinful reactions. Indifference to Vedic rituals. Liberation from birth and death. Liberation from birth and death. Samadhi, realization of one's relationship with Krishna. Going back to Godhead. F. Give up all material attachments. Equipoise in happiness and distress. That's point 2. Equipoise in happiness and distress. Equipoise. Same mind. Like balanced mind in happiness and distress. Would you like me to put it on the board? Accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. Unaffected by good and evil. Unaffected by good and evil. Evil? Detached, free from attachment, fear, and anger. free from attachment, fear, and anger. And then point five, one who is not Krishna conscious may easily fall down. How? By contemplating the sense objects. One develops attachment, then lust, anger, delusion, memory bewildered. Intelligence lost. Then B, by artificial restriction of senses. And then C, he cannot enjoy life. Result, a slight agitation of the mind makes him fall down. Agitation means disturbance. I'll write it on the board for you.
Agitation.
Point six, devotees control the senses by following the regulative principles of freedom. Regulative principles of freedom. A, freedom from attachment and aversion. Attainment of mercy of Krishna. Enjoys life because offers everything to Krishna. I want to do chapter 3 today as well. It'll save us bringing our books back on Friday. Okay? So chapter 3. One side, Kama Yoga, we have direct. The other side is renunciation of work. So the first point under renunciation of work would be indirect. 2 under Kama Yoga is work or activity. You might note that in 2 under renunciation of work, speculation is mistyped. Should be C-U-L-A-T. It's a typing error then. 3 under Kama Yoga is... What's that? Answer to 2, work or activity. Yeah? Work or activity. Then 3 on the side of renunciation will be philosophy. Yeah. Dry speculation. And without philosophy, religion without philosophy, this is on the side of Kama Yoga, religion without philosophy is fanaticism or sentimentalism. And philosophy on the side of renunciation of work, just to repeat, philosophy without religion is dry speculation. Number 4, on the side of Kama Yoga purifies one. Renunciation of work, sannyas without purification is disturbance or cheating. Without purification. Whereabouts are we? Kama Yoga. Number 4, there's nothing needed there. It just purifies one. But sannyas without purification is a disturbance or cheating. Number 5, natural because the soul is by nature active. It's on the side of Kama Yoga. Natural because the soul is by nature active. 5, on the side of renunciation of work, is unnatural. Goes against the natural tendencies of the soul. It's unnatural. It should be unnatural. Point 5 is unnatural. 6, work necessary to maintain body and soul together. 6, on the side of renunciation of work, without work cannot maintain life. Okay, section B. Purpose of creation is to help the conditioned souls learn how to perform yajna, become purified, and go back to Godhead. 3 things. Perform yajna, become purified, go back to Godhead. (Clears throat) Yeah, on the next one, sacrifice. Point one. 3 points. Perform yagya, become purified, and go back to Godhead. Number two, purpose of sacrifice is to please Vishnu. Result A, live happily with all necessities in the material world. B, become purified of sinful reactions. C, liberation. D, go back to Godhead. Necessity for sacrifice. Vedas come from Krishna, give prescribed duties, that gives performance of yagya. The yagya gives the reins give the grains. See, performance of yagya. Give performance of yagya. D, give reins. E, give grains. All living beings are maintained by Krishna. This formula is meant to make that very clear. Actually, I personally find it a lot easier to remember this sequence in another way. You might like to write this along the side. Yeah, it's just sort of, you know, whatever's the easiest way to remember it. The main point of exercise is to remember it. If don't perform sacrifice, get sinful reactions and are a thief. If don't perform sacrifice, you get sinful reactions. Sinful reactions. This is the next one on. Just go on for the next space. Yeah. Pardon? Maintained by Krishna. Yeah. So we're on the next one. We get sinful reactions and we are a thief. Are a thief. Best sacrifice is Sankirtan Yajna. Then we're on to section C. A self-realized soul works. Why? To set the example. To set the example. D, one, will be the cause of creating unwanted population. Would be the cause of creating unwanted population. Two, would destroy the peace of all living beings. Peace of all living beings. E, how? With attachment. With attachment, yeah. Devotees should not disturb, their minds by advising them to renounce work, but should engage them in work with devotion to Krishna. Devotees are more merciful than Krishna, therefore try to enlighten ignorant men. You can make a point here. Why they do that is because they know the desire and purpose of Krishna. Huh? Why do they do that? Why they do something different than Krishna? Because they know the desire, the inner desire and purpose of Krishna. F, one, born of motive passion. Two, changes into wrath or anger. Three, forces us to act sinfully. Four, burns like fire. 5A, senses. B, mind. C, intelligence. How to fight? A, regulate the senses. Regulate senses. B, soul must be engaged in Krishna consciousness. Then the intelligence is strong. Intelligence engages the mind. Mind engages the senses. If no Krishna consciousness, then A, senses drag down the mind. senses drag down the mind.
The mind.
The mind. The mind drags down the intelligence. And the intelligence drags down the soul. Okay, so we finished chapter 3 as well.
Tomorrow,
if you can bring chart 3 from the charts that you took, bring chart 3 as well as do reading of verses 10 to 16. The group of charts that you ordered from me, the Xerox charts, yeah, they have a value, they have a use. We will use chart 3 tomorrow. So anybody who ordered the charts, if you could bring chart 3 tomorrow. Have a look for chart 3. It has it written at the top which number it is. Yeah, the series that you took of charts. Have a look at number 3. Anything else? Any questions? But I did tell you that chapter 2, chapter 2, 13 and 18 are viewed. No way around that. There's a reason I'm not giving you the questions with each section, because I want you to read the whole section thoroughly. Not just pick out the answers to the questions I give you. No, it's good to revise in that way. Keep it flowing. Read the whole text. Take your notes according to the questions I gave you. And then when I give you the questions, then go back and revise in terms of those questions. Okay? Yeah? Each advesha is desire and hate. That's where it comes from, but it's they're two different things. Icha is desire, so we have a desire for enjoyment. So there's a relationship between icha and bhoga. Huh? You get the point? Yeah. And dvesha is hate, so we renounce what we don't like. Yeah, that's a good point. That's going back one step further. To the thing that the duality that brings us here and causes problems. It's icha, dvesha, hate and desire. Any other last questions? Everything's okay? Good. Please set my bases.